Welcome to New Letters on the Air. I'm Rebecca Presson. Our guest today is poet Juan Felipe Herrera. A native of California, Juan Felipe Herrera has published 4 books of poetry. He studied at Stanford, UCLA, and the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and now teaches in the Chicano and Latin American Studies Department at California State University, Fresno. Herrera was born in California's San Joaquin Valley and spent his youth following the migrant farm workers' trail, landing for periods of time in Los Angeles and in San Francisco's Mission District. Herrera's status as an outsider from the American mainstream is apparent in all his writing. His first book, Rebosos of Love, mixed English and Spanish. Then, the next two, Exiles of Desire and Face Games, were written in English. But the poet's most recent book, Acrílica, was written first in Spanish. It's published in a side-by-side edition with the English translation next to the Spanish original. In an interview conducted in his office at Fresno State, Herrera said that writing Acrílica in Spanish allowed him to express himself in a way that was impossible in English.
It has a lot to do with music, with sound. It has a lot to do with deep images, with symbols. It has a lot to do with unleashing memory and vision. It has a lot to do with energy. Those kind of things, the way the line works too, and the way the poem as a textual piece works, has a lot to do with that. In Spanish, I just get into a different flavor, a different set of emotions, or a different intensity of emotions, mm-hmm. and I perhaps get into them deeper, perhaps get into them quicker, or perhaps get into them more with more sensuality. I don't know. That's how I feel about it.
I'm wondering, did you find yourself suddenly thinking in Spanish a lot more and need to express yourself that way?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, people say thinking in a language or dreaming in a language. I don't know, you know. For me, I think I'm more formless than that. I don't even know if I think in any language at all that could be called a language. It probably could be. I'm more of a volcanic character, where I just feel a lot of things erupting and moving and exploding and swishing mm-hmm. through my body or bodies, and then it's what channel I choose to let all that go through. And if it's Spanish, that's great. And if it's English, that's great, because I love both languages. This is Retrato Desnudo Número 30, 4x6. Portrait Nude Number 30, 4x6. Sus pechos son frágiles, eternamente solos. El cabello se desliza, relámpagos y licor. Algo amargo queda entre sus labios, fuma y se acaricia. Her breasts are delicate, eternally alone. Her hair falls loose, lightning and liquor. Something bitter is between her lips. She smokes and strokes herself.
Many of the poems in Juan Felipe Herrera's new book, Acrílica, are, as the poem he just read, inspired by the visual arts. Some critics have compared Herrera's work to that of the Spanish surrealist. The poet says he finds the comparison flattering, but thinks his work is too varied and multidimensional, covering a wide range of styles, themes, and subjects, to fit any movement. And if the variations are confusing to the reader, well, Herrera says he doesn't worry much about how the reader will respond to his writing.
I'm very fickle with the reader, because I think the reader doesn't exist when I'm writing. The reader doesn't exist. I'm the reader when I'm writing. And I become a reader, I become a writer, I become, I guess, a lot of things when I'm doing this stuff, when I'm engaged in writing and painting and talking and performing. When I'm with people and I'm reading the material, things happen. I know that if I say the moon scythe swan, someone is going to say, oh yeah, the moon scythe swan, and someone else is going to say, well, the scythe swan, and someone else is going to say, the swan scythe moon, and we'll all have a good time. Or we'll all go on to something different, and that may be better than the Moonside Swan, or the Mango Tango, or whatever. I think the bottom line is every image, every sense, and every word will find its own partner. It'll find its own dance partner in the audience or in the person's experience or in the person's conscious mind or subconscious or multi-conscious body. It's fine with me. I don't worry about it, like you said.
Are you trying to create what, say, an abstract painter does, you know, like Jackson Pollock trying to make chaos on a canvas? Is that a goal?
At times, yeah. At times I like that. At times I like to do that, the Pollock dance. At times I like that. I believe in splashing paint on oneself and people and on landscapes and as many different fibers and materials that one can get. I love that. That's really my Dagwood sandwich. I love to do that and love to eat that and share that with people. Or it could be a taco or a torta, too. That's fine, too. This is called My Mother's Coat is Green. My mother's coat is green. Emerald, a sea of broken guitars, cubism leaning against an old fence in El Paso, Texas. No one knows her except me. Every now and then she plays a fugue in the mansion, or she walks on the meadows with all the children singing. Yesterday she told me age is inevitable. Then she spoke of emptiness, a carpet beneath us, stray patches of dreams that escape us.
I'm wondering how you see your development. As you mentioned, I didn't see your first book, but I noticed your 1983 book, Exiles of Desire, is pretty political and deals a lot with what we might call the Chicano experience. And then...
Face Games?
Yeah, Face Games, 1987, is sort of lyric, short lyric poems, largely. Mm-hmm. And then the new poem has the sort of edginess and the surrealism we talked about. Are you kind of playing with poems, or are you changing as the poems change, or what's going on?
I'm changing, period. Mm-hmm. And I'll say what I want to say or feel I'm saying in any form that comes to me at the moment. I'm always open. I really am. I'm always open for what I see in other people's work or just simply a leaf falling on my head. I'm always open to sensations. And so I respond to them. I like the multiplicity of things and of voices and of textures. And I think that's good. I just love it. And I can also use it and work with it in performance. I can work with musicians and go beyond what I do.
When you do readings, do you have certain poems that you think are better aloud and certain poems that are better read, or how does that work?
Yeah, it all depends on the event and on the moment and on the occasion. For example, and it doesn't have to be, it's not a one-sided thing either. I just, what hits me in those places. I remember reading at a Salvadoreño rally in San Francisco a couple of years back, and I felt like reading in a formal oratorical voice, and I had a poem from Acrílica called Es la Tierra. It's called Earth Chorus in English, and it's a poem that lends itself to kind of a round shape of sounds.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of Greek in a way. It's patterned after a Greek chorus.
Right. Yeah. So I got into that feeling. Earth Chorus. It is the earth that snarls and slashes with black jaguar eyes and teeth and incandescent claws, the pharaoh, and his troops of delicate overcoat and metal delight. It is the earth that reveals lies and recognizes with lightning and birds and bare feet and adolescent brows and cheekbones of lava the traitor. And his wire hands and plantation laws and slave labor. It is the earth flowing the dew of brave women and men on march with rivers and coffee plantations with salt and fury. It is the earth that determines the new furrows, the knives of plants, of shining flesh, the skin rising, the viper of rhymes, and the guerrilla war breathing fire, extinguishing the plague, the silk web, the false tower. It is the earth that hurls red whips and elastic bodies, infinite fingers and invisible legs that fly and smash the final throne, the minuscule lie, the throat, and the fist of the general, the boss, the shocked supervisor. It is the earth. with its moss and its deep ovaries and sperm that spill their honey and sweat and unleash the rain and purify with their heat. It is the earth that recognizes the squadron of planes, the uniform of shadows and silver, the barracks of business and anguish and tanks of hired blood, the flag of iodine, dust and rage in the center of camp, the tongue of the American president twisting the nuclear spit. Earth, send the women of your blood like suns. Send the workers of your branches like lightning. Send the gorillas of your peaks like tigers. Manda las mujeres de tu sangre como soles. Manda los obreros de tus ramas como rayos. Manda tus guerrillas de tus cimas como tigres. Earth, amid the metropolitan streets, entre los callejones de susto, amid the Honduran refugee camps, entre los cercos de refugio de Honduras, amid the Guatemalan slums, entre las celdas de Argentina, amid the Lacandon lakes of Chiapas, entre los municipios de El Salvador, amid the avenues of Chile, entre las espinas de Jamaica, amid the storms of Haiti, entre las tempestades de Haití, amid the phosphorescent jungles of Brazil, entre las fosforescentes selvas de Brasil, amid the liquid nights of South Africa, entre las líquidas noches de Sudáfrica, amid the fever, amid death, to make a quake of victory, to make a quake, a cluster of liberated world, to make a song in flood. It is the earth, es la tierra, that triumphs, la que triunfa.
This is New Letters on the Air, and our guest is Juan Felipe Herrera. Herrera's latest project is a book of essays about the Mexican artist Frida Kahlo. Kahlo, Herrera says, symbolizes his own lifelong obsession with the dispossessed. However, even though the poet does think of himself as a highly political person and all writing as political in some way, he says he doesn't want to restrict himself to any particular subject or venue.
And then again, I give myself the freedom as a political being and writer to take any shape, mm-hmm. and to become any shape, mm-hmm. through my writing and through my expression, and I think that's something that we need to look at, and I think it's already taking place. That is, writers thinking political writing actually can take many forms, as opposed to maybe the forms that we're used to seeing from particular political magazines and from the 60s maybe, or from the 70s maybe. I think political writing or political poetry or political literature can be very surprising in its form and its way of speaking and also in its speakers, and how to deal with the issue and the issues at hand. And it can be open and direct, and it can be blatant, and that's fine. And it can be subtle and complex, and that's fine. And I think as long as we play with it, we got it. That's mm-hmm. when a writer...
I mean, as opposed to taking yourself so seriously that you get to be, like, didactic and boring.
Yeah, right. Taking myself too seriously, which I always do, is a problem. And taking writing too seriously, which I do, is also a problem. The poem has its place and its space, but there's also a big gap and a big blank that the poem cannot address, and maybe people need to address directly.
Well, this notion of dispossessed and people who are exiles within the country is not exactly something new in your writing. Mm-hmm. I mean, your poetry's mm-hmm. been dealing with that for as long as I guess you've been writing. Has this been a real issue in your life?
Yeah, it's been an issue in my life. Yeah, it's been my experience. And so what I want to do is I want to come up with a language for my experience. And I guess that's what I'm always doing. That's what I'm always doing, is coming up with a language. I've got a task, coming up with a language for my experience. And that's why I do it different in every book, and that's why perhaps I do it different in every page.
How close do you think you've gotten? You've tried a lot of different ways of expressing your experience.
With expressing my experience? Uh-huh. That's a good question. I haven't really stopped to measure. I'll just go ahead and say that I have gotten to it with every poem. With every poem, I solved that question. With every poem, I solved that question. So every new poem is a new solution to that question. I think with every poem, I've, in a sense, photographed or kind of excavated the answers or the issues or or what's going on with me and with what I, also with what I see. You know, a lot of it has to do with what I sense and with what I see. It's about my family. It's about my experience with my family. It's about what I see taking place in this country. It's with what I see taking place in the Chicano community, and also in as many communities that I have a chance to connect with, and with the times, and perhaps with the world. So it's a big leap. It's a big kind of a grandiose, honorific type of statement. But that's how I feel about it. And at times I shrink back from that, and I just say, well, I'm really just putting ink on paper and scribbles on paper, and that's about as far as I can talk about it. And at the same time, I feel like I am leaping out of myself and dealing with things much bigger than me.
Do you still feel alienated? I mean, you're a professor at a big university, and you know, you have books published and stuff. You still feel outside?
I think it's inescapable, and it's not. I don't think it's just my condition. I'm related to everyone, and I think we're all interrelated and related to each other, and I think we all face alienation, and I think we all are in the eye of alienation. It's a matter of how we cover it up. It's a matter of how we camouflage it, and how we camouflage our feelings and ourselves. And what I'm dealing with is the unknowability or the invisibility of the dispossessed. I guess this whole idea of being interpreted by mega America or by America, that is being a brown man or a Chicano or being a person on the margin, not necessarily brown, right? Mm-hmm. Being a person on the margin, on the outside, not in the center, not in the middle, not at the center of power. A person more associated with powerlessness. This is a piece called Exiles. At the Greyhound bus stations, at airports, at silent wharfs, the bodies exit the crafts. Women, men, children, cast out from the new paradise. They are not there in the homeland, in Argentina, not there in Santiago, Chile, never there, no more in Montevideo, Uruguay, and they are not here in America. They are in exile, a slow scream across a yellow bridge, the jaws stretched, widening, the eyes multiplied into blood orbits torn, whirling, spilling between two slopes, the sea black, swallowing all prayers, shadeless. Only tall, faceless figures of pain flutter across the bridge. They pace in charged suits, the hands lift, point and ache and fly at sunset as cold, dark birds. They will hover over the dead ones, a family shattered by military, buried by hunger, asleep now, with the eyes burning, echoes calling, Joaquin, Maria, Andrea, Joaquin. Joaquin, Andrea, in exilio. From here we see them. We, the ones from here, not there or across, only here, without the bridge, without the arms as blue liquid, quenching the secret thirst of unmarked graves, without our flesh, journeying refuge or pilgrimage, not passengers on imaginary ships sailing between reef and sky, we that die here, awake, on Harrison Street, on Excelsior Avenue, clutching the tenderness of chrome radios, whispering to the saints in supermarkets, motionless in the chasms of playgrounds, searching at 9 a.m. from our third floor cells, bowing mute, shoving the curtains with trembling, speckled brown hands. Alone, we look out to the wires, the summer, to the newspapers wound in knots as matches for tenements. We that look out from our miniature vestibules, peering out from our old clothes, the father's well-sewn plaid shirt pocket, an old woman's oversized wool sweater, peering out from the makeshift kitchen. We peer out to the streets, to the parades. We the ones from here, not there or across, from here, only here. Where is our exile? Who has taken it?
That was Juan Felipe Herrera reading the poem Exiles from his book Exiles of Desire that was published in 1983. I was thinking mm-hmm. that this poem yeah. and one of your more recent poems, mm-hmm. Exile Boulevard.
Ah, that's an interesting one. That's
yeah.
A long one, but that's an interesting
no, one. But it was sort of a new version. The first one was much more romantic vision.
Kind of like a crossover.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, and this one is sort of more hard and,
oh,
and
interesting.
Driving, don't you think?
Yeah, it's the first time somebody's talked about it to me in that way. And this goes back to what I said, in a sense. When I write in Spanish, something different happens. Boulevard de Exilio. A plena luz van rodando los sueños. Después de siglos detenidos, en un cuarto húmedo de madera barata, el sol los golpea, y siguen rodando y tragándose las uñas, siguen construyendo
the dreams
nuevas
are rolling
alcobas
in broad
rojas,
daylight, after centuries of being arrested inside a damp room of cheap
Sancha.
Wood. The sun beats down on them, and they keep rolling along and building new little bedrooms where their small moons of rage will sleep. The street is wide. The supermarket cop prays his rosary of sighs and keeps track in his notebook of the sleepwalking eyes floating over the floor. Tell me, Father, what do the pupils of my people confess to you? Are they your Sunday collection baskets? I see the goat's head wrapped in a plastic bag and the short applause of teeth in its jawbone, and it looks at us. And the back howls and the bodies ignore you and ask for 2 pounds of tripe or a few pork chops and pay their bills squared off like offerings for a miracle, and they grab the change.
The images in that poem, Exile Boulevard, appear to be old country type images. I'm sure they're really reflections of like the Mission District of San Francisco, but they have a real old country feel to them. Is that what you're striving for, or are you trying to find something that you might have had you been raised in Mexico? Or?
Well, you have a good ear. You have a very good ear. To begin with, I'd never try to do anything with a poem. There's nothing I ever try to do with a poem. Maybe the only thing I'll ever try maybe is I'll grab a batch of 15 words that I find really odd or weird or strange or words that I never use, and then I'll write a poem with those words. I may use them all, I may not. So I'm not trying anything in this poem, but the idea of an old country, of capturing or of bringing up or conjuring a time past with the senses that you speak of is interesting for me. I think it's my memory working. When I wrote this poem, when I read the poem, I feel the mission as it was maybe in the 50s, because I was in the mission in the 50s, in the Mission District in the 50s, and I was there in the 60s and in the 80s and 90s. But so I'm kind of collapsing time in a very deep way, in a very internal way, and maybe that's what you're picking up. But there is no attempt to, you know, go back to old Mexico or to really represent the mission as it used to be. I never had that in mind, but in a sense I did have it in mind.
You're sounding very rational and logical here tonight, but I have to think
yeah.
that at least some of what you do is motivated by anger too.
Oh yeah.
What makes you mad and when does and how do you either use or abuse that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I do sound rational. I'm good at that. but I'm glad you're toppling my rationality. It helps me. I need people to do that to me. I'm angry. I definitely am. Anger has been my my oyster, to put it in a weird way. Or anger has been my my anvil. Anger has been my anvil, and that's where I have forged myself in many ways. In many fruitful ways, and that's where I have written all these piles of paper on the anvil of anger. Anger, oh, it's anger about my mother dying. It's anger about the life my family led. It's anger about my family in its entirety, cousins and uncles and aunts, and those associated with my family, Mexicanos and Latinos and. And history itself, and the academy, and institutions, and the city, and the polluted air—all those things make me angry. All those things make me angry. Mm-hmm. And what do I do with the anger? Sometimes I write, and when I write, this is what I write. And sometimes I just eat it. I just eat it. And at other times, it'll pop up in another form. I'll dream it. Or I'll scream it, or I'll scream it out, or I'll walk it out, right? So it's anger has become a friend of mine. It's become a friend of mine. It's not something that I really want to do away with, but it's not something I want to keep. It's kind of it sounds odd to me as I say this. It's something that I want to dispel and release. At the same time, there's anger every day. You know, there's anger every day. And I eat it every day, or I spit it out every day. And but indeed, yes, it makes my poetry a lot. It makes for my poetry and my art.
You want to read a real angry poem?
Oh, they're all angry. They're all angry for me. You see, for me.
Uh-huh.
See, I don't know how it is for how what anger is for others. I know what it really is for me. New Rock Movement. And this is a poem that I wanted for sure to use the term New Rock in it, or New Rock Movement. And the best way to do it was to put it into the title. I'm playing my bass, Sabor, only for exiles in the empire, excite, opalescent cheekbones, leaking fire, veins, shoebop slide. Riffing up the street, out from the taxi for unknown poets from Ixcuintla, Nayarit, East L.A. and Managua. Young sisters in sister spirit and full attire, sawed-off tuxedo and neon, Maybelline. Eyeshadow spiral glowing on the purple petal knife blade corners. Looking good, thinking Dostoyevsky, Prince, and Otto René Castillo, and rap a prayer to La Virgen de Guadalupe, in a Catholic schoolgirl's pleated dress, smoking, snapping, ready with the radio and a new radar, lessons for the banished crossing the borderlands of the great assassination. Clap your hands, Sabor Rockers.
Juan Felipe Herrera was interviewed in Fresno, California, where he lives and teaches at California State University. His books of poetry are Rebosos of Love, Exiles of Desire, Face Games, and Acrylica. He thinks his new book on Frida Kahlo will be titled Master Frida. Copies of this and most new Letters on the Air program are available on cassette for $8. Write to us, sending us your comments as well as the call letters of the station you hear us on. Our address is New Letters on the Air, University of Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri, 64110. You can call us at 816-235-1159. New Letters on the Air is a production of the literary quarterly New Letters, which is edited by James McKinley. Assistant producer is Juliana Nakashima. Our studio engineer at KCUR-FM is Don Harvey. Our theme music was written by Gerald Kemner, and we're funded in part by the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and the Missouri Arts Council. I'm Rebecca Presson.